Well, summer is unofficially here, and that means a lot more sun exposure. And on this part of the show, we're going to talk about how to protect yourself. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dr. Apple Bodemer. She is a dermatologist, associate professor in the Department of Dermatology at UW-Madison. She's been with us a number of times. She directs the Integrative Dermatology Clinic. So talk with Dr. Bodemer today about how to reduce your risk of skin cancer. And, of course, we'll take your questions. Maybe you're confused about what sunscreen to buy. Maybe you have questions about skin cancer. We'd love to have you part of the conversation. Give a call, 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Apple Bodemer, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
It's good to be here again.
How common is skin cancer?
It's incredibly common. About 1 in 5 Americans will develop some sort of skin cancer before the age of 70. And and as you get beyond 70, it becomes even more common after that.
And there's more than one kind of skin cancer, if I'm not mistaken. Talk about that.
Yeah, we typically break skin cancer down into melanoma, because melanoma is very different than the other types of skin cancer we handle in dermatology. And then there's non-melanoma skin cancer. And in that non-melanoma skin cancer basket, basal cell cancer, which is the most common type of skin cancer, and squamous cell cancer, which is the second most common type of skin cancer, are lumped together. They behave fairly similarly. There are some differences, but for the most part, those cancers are generally not life-threatening, though surgery to remove them can be quite disfiguring. So even though they tend not to metastasize in most people, there are some patients like transplant patients or patients whose immune systems aren't working well where squamous cell cancer can be much more of a significant problem. But in general, for most people out in the general public, they might think, oh, well, it's not going to kill me. I don't have to worry about it. But you can lose a significant part of your face, you know, especially if you have cancer on the nose or ears or other sort of really cosmetically sensitive areas is what we like to call them.
Yeah, for sure. What kind of signs are we looking for?
Well, so for the non-melanoma cancers that I was just talking about, we're looking for sores that won't heal, spots like scaly spots that might just get painful or start bleeding on their own without being scratched or picked at. And those are really the two big things when it comes to the non-melanoma type of skin cancers. Melanoma is definitely much more serious. And that shows up as a new or changing dark spot typically.
And that's something that you know nobody wants to see happen. And I'm thinking, I'm as you were talking, I'm suddenly looking at my arms to see for any spots and thinking about one that I have on my back. And I don't think it's changed, but maybe it has. How often should we be looking for signs of skin cancer?
Yeah, I recommend that all people should be looking at their skin about once a month, just taking 5 minutes just to look in a relaxed state, sort of looking at your skin so you're comfortable with the kinds of spots you have and the kinds of spots your body makes. Because when it comes to melanoma, usually it shows up as something that's different than everything else that you've got. And so that can be a really easy clue. You know, so regardless of what your risks might be, just being comfortable with your skin is going to pay off in the long run. Even when people are seeing me once or twice a year, usually that happens after you've had a skin cancer, or even if you're seeing your doctor once a year, skin cancer can pop up at any time. And so those monthly skin self-checks are really the most powerful tool we have for early detection.
Joy in West Bend has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Joy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I, besides wanting to know, you know, what brands of sunscreen are good and effective, I want to know how long they're effective for. I have probably several different kinds of sunscreens in my cabinet, and I've had them for years, so I'm just wondering, do they stay effective?
That's a really good question. And no, they don't. They will have an expiration date on them as well. And so you should really go through and get rid of any that are expired for sure. Sunscreen, there are two common mistakes that people make with sunscreen. One is that they don't apply enough. So if you've got a body in a bathing suit, it should take about a heaping palm full to cover that body in a bathing suit. So if you're a child, your palm will be smaller, but you've got a smaller body to put it on. And that usually amounts to 1 to 2 ounces, depending on, you know, the size of the person, the age of the person. However, most sunscreen bottles are maybe, you know, 4 ounces, 6 ounces, 12 ounces. Maybe you get like a economy size that might be 32 ounces. But even at 32 ounces, that sunscreen should not be lasting you all summer. Most of us put a little dab on our palm and we put a little swipe on our cheeks and call it good. But we are not getting the amount of protection that the bottle tells us we're getting if we're only using it in those very thin layers. So that's the first thing. Really, for most of us, a sunscreen bottle shouldn't last even one season, much less a week if you're somebody that's pretty active and outdoors. That second part of your question was about which sunscreens to use.
Yes.
Yeah, and so that, like, there's a big difference. There's two classes of sunscreens. There's the physical blockers, and that's zinc oxide, titanium dioxide, and then now iron oxide is a new one coming onto the scene. That one's getting some popularity because it doesn't leave a chalky white residue, and it has a little bit of pigment to it. The chemical-based sunscreens, there's a long list of those, and it's kind of an alphabet soup, and they work in two different ways. I think of the physical blockers as your force shield. It's a deflector. The UV radiation will hit those particles that are, you know, distributed across your skin and deflect away from your skin. Whereas the chemical blockers absorb the UV radiation and convert it to heat. So they, I prefer the physical blockers. So I prefer that people use either the zinc oxide or titanium dioxide based, or now iron oxide based sunscreens, because there's a lot of controversy around the chemicals that we use for sunscreen. Some of them are known hormone disruptors. We don't really know how that plays out, population-wide, like long-term, but there's a lot of controversy around, in particular, some of the sunscreen ingredients. So to make it simple, if you're sticking to the physical blockers, then you're better off and you can avoid some of that, those questions.
Thanks very much for that call. Appreciate it. What do you think of the sort of the spray-on ones, the aerosol types? I go golfing and I'm going to play 18 holes and I'm going to walk 18. I usually have that in my bag and I will have applied some sunscreen when I start. And then at between holes 9 and 10, so I'm halfway there, I will pull out that aerosol and add some more. So that's a couple hours have gone by.
And that's good. Right. You should be reapplying sunscreen every 2 hours, regardless of the SPF you're using. I'm not as big a fan of the spray-on sunscreens, but I do recognize that they're easy to use and that UV radiation is a known human carcinogen. We know that it can stimulate skin cancers. So any sunscreen that you're willing to use is better than no sunscreen. That said, some of the concerns that kind of float around the spray-on sunscreens are, one, when you spray on, you're not getting an very even layer. And so I have seen some pretty wild burns from people that spray the front, spray the back, and then they miss this sort of funky line along the side of their arm. And then the other concern, well, that can happen is they're not that great for the environment. And if you look at videos where they have sort of used some sort of filter so you can actually see where the sunscreen is going, most of it's not actually going on your body. So that's another part of that problem. When people are going to use the spray on sunscreens, I generally recommend that you spray it into your palm and then rub it on your body. That was going to give you a much more even layer and help avoid some of those concerns about it.
That's what I like to do, just spray it in my hand, and because otherwise it's breezy, it's flowing all over the place. Well, Dr. Apple Bodimer, our guest today, she's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today to talk with you about skin cancer and sunscreens and a whole lot more. So I hope you'll stay with us. Our lines are pretty full. The number is 800-642-1234. And you can also email us to ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking about preventing skin cancer on the show right now. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Back with us, Dr. Apple Bodemer, a dermatologist and associate professor in the Department of Dermatology at UW-Madison. Have you tried UPF clothing? Did it work for you? What questions do you have about skin cancer? Join the conversation, 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Kathleen in Milwaukee has a question, so let's go there. Kathleen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello?
Hi. What can we do for you?
Hi. I would like to know about the skin tag removers or mole removers that you see online now. They're almost like a laser pen for you to do at home because insurances, you know, won't remove skin tags. I was just wanting to know what your, if you have any feedback or experience with what we see online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I want to distinguish there's a difference between skin tags and moles. And I would absolutely never recommend that people get moles removed for cosmetic purposes without having them sampled and sent to a pathologist. There are some freestanding laser clinics that will laser off moles for people, but that's never a good idea because while we can stop the pigment-producing cells from making pigment, we can't stop them from growing necessarily, and that could be a really, really big risk when it comes to being able to detect melanoma. Skin tags are really common. We see them in areas of friction, especially the neck, under the arms, along the bra line or waistband, sometimes between the thighs. They tend to pop up as we get older, and they can be a real nuisance. And you're right, insurance typically doesn't cover having them removed. It all depends on the size. So for some very small, thin skin tags, I have some patients who have used the wart freeze away. I don't really think it works for warts very well, so I'm glad it has a use. And they've been really happy. A lot of the skin, like the tag removers that are out there, I mean, it's if they're inexpensive, it's worth trying. These laser pens, I would have some skepticism about in terms of if they're going to be powerful enough to be able to actually remove something that's substantial, then they're also powerful enough to create scarring and potentially have some complications. And so I wouldn't feel really comfortable recommending those. But some of the topical things, the worst that you would get into is maybe a blister, which is kind of what we're trying to do, is get a blister so that tag falls off and new skin grows up underneath.
All right, Kathleen, thank you so much. Pat in Mequon, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi there. Thanks for having this program. My 21-year-old grandson is having a problem with circular white blotchy spots on his arms after he has been exercising or walking vigorously where he gets warm and sweaty. And they don't itch. They're kind of like about an inch circular. A little bit of a raised area around the circumference of the blotch, and they just started happening. So he doesn't know what's causing them.
Do they look kind of like paint splattered onto the skin, like somebody took a paintbrush and kind of flung it at him?
No, actually, they are. You know what? The first thing that they remind you of is a ringworm, but they're, you know, they're pretty diffuse over his arms.
Well, and it is like, that sounds like something that might be good for to have him check in with his dermatologist or primary care doctor. There are a few things that could be, you know, and with his age and, you know, the diffuseness of this, I don't believe it's anything super concerning. There's a common condition called tinea versicolor that's caused by a yeast that we commonly see on the shoulders and arms, and it can show up as white in some people or pinkish brown in others. So that might be something to consider. But it really, there are other things that can cause white splotches on the skin. So I just would want to make sure that he's seen by his healthcare professional before I would make any more specific recommendations.
All right, Pat, good luck. Thank you for calling. Jan emailed to ask if you could talk about the recent headline about benzene in sunscreen.
I haven't seen that particular headline, but sunscreen has been getting a lot of interesting press in terms of the chemicals, the active ingredients, and then also the inactive ingredients. And there, some of the inactive ingredients that we find in sunscreen are there to help stabilize the chemical sunscreen ingredients. So in particular, there's one, avobenzone. It's pretty safe. It has a low risk for causing allergies. We think it has a low risk of being a hormone disruptor, but it's not very stable. So it has to be combined with other chemicals in order to be stabilized. The physical blockers don't really need that as much, which is, again, why I say if you stick with the physical blockers, then you know, you're much more less likely to run into trouble with the chemical ingredients. The other thing to just watch for is kind of looking at other things that they might be putting in sunscreen. You never want to ever use a sunscreen bug spray product or bug deterrent product, because oftentimes those chemicals don't interact well together and they actually don't belong together at all. There usually aren't bugs when we're in the sun. There's usually not as many bugs. The bugs like to stick to the shade. So it's a good idea to keep those two things separate.
You know, speaking of the ingredients, a listener emailed that a coworker is headed to Hawaii, and she told him to pack his sunscreen. He said that he has to buy it there because the stuff we have around here is potentially harmful to the coral reefs. She found that odd. Can you talk about that? She found it interesting. It's okay for us, but not for the ocean life.
Well, and a lot of the chemicals that are in the these are the chemical-based sunscreens. Again, so I kind of always go back to, like, look for those physical blockers. You're going to be much safer, and you'll be better off. In terms of the chemical ingredients, there are a few of them that are known to really be destructive to the coral reefs. Those are also ones that are high on the list for having concerns for human exposure as well. You know, one in particular, oxybenzone, is one that that probably has the highest absorption rate, meaning that it absorbs through the skin and gets into the systemic circulation. It has a high risk for causing allergies and also is the one that we have the strongest connection with this hormone disruption activity. It's also bad for the coral reefs. So, you know, just so for example, in Europe, they've looked at this particular sunscreen ingredient and limited it to 2.2%. That's the maximum that's legally allowed in Europe. And in the U.S., our legal maximum is 6%. So we tend to have a lot more of these ingredients that are a lot higher concentrations of the ingredients than are allowed in other places. You know, buying it in Hawaii, they're going to be more comfortable that it's reef safe. And obviously that's a much bigger deal for them. But certainly in places like Florida and Mississippi, where we're along the Gulf and we have, you know, humans are interacting with the ocean, that is important in, you know, in the main 50, in the main U.S., mainland U.S. as well. But some of the better sunscreen ingredients do come from Europe, and they have a lot of, they have ingredients that are safer that we don't have access to here in the U.S. So I have patients that get their sunscreen and, you know, sent from family members in Greece or somewhere else because of that. But if you stick with the physical blockers, the zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, you're going to avoid a lot of that controversy.
Renee in Chippewa Falls has a question for you. Renee, thanks for calling.
Hi, I don't have a question. I just have a comment, PSA, if you will. My husband had a spot on the bottom of his foot, which is, you know, I noticed it about 15, maybe even longer years ago. He was sitting in a recliner with his foot up. And I kept an eye on it, and I sent him to his then doctor, and the doctor said it was nothing, and you know, we kind of watched it for a few years, and then one day I noticed that it looked like that freckle had exploded. So I got him back into the doctor, and the doctor sent him to the dermatologist. They took it off, and it was melanoma, and then they had to go back in because they didn't get it all. and he ended up with a skin graft on the bottom of his foot. So the PSA is, it doesn't always happen where you get sun.
Hmm.
That's absolutely
Dr.
correct.
Boomer. Yeah.
Yeah. Melanoma is a funny cancer. It's very unpredictable. And when we catch it early, the five-year survival rate, which is that five-year survival rate is a common measure that's used in oncology. The five-year survival rate is more than 98%, 98, 99%. But when it's gone deeper, it can drop. You know, if it's metastasized within the body, that five-year survival rate drops to just over 25%. So with melanoma, it really is important to pay attention to your moles. And like you said, even looking at the bottom of the feet, you know, looking at your buttocks, places that might not see sun, because melanoma, it is a trickier one. While it is more common in sun-exposed areas, we do see it in non-exposed areas as well.
Renee, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Mary in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hello. I have a question about nanotechnology. I'm finding these sunscreen, and they have the word clear, the mineral kind of sunscreen. But I'm looking, reading the back of it, and it'll mention micro. And I was wondering, I'm thinking about nanotechnology and how good that is for the skin.
And that's a good question. And like a lot of these controversies, they're based in some science. A lot of the concerns about nanoparticles causing cancer being destructive to skin cells comes from nanoparticles that are inhaled. A lot of this research is old. It's done in foundries or metal companies where they have aerosolized nanoparticles of zinc or titanium. And actually, the getting it into the lungs, it is thought that that can be problematic, which is another reason I kind of, with the spray sunscreens, if you're going to spray it on, if it is a physical blocker, spray it in your hand first and rub it on. The other thing is this: the other science about nanoparticles is when we're looking at petri dishes. So a small dish where you have a soup of these nanoparticles and you drop in a few skin cells. And it is clear that these nanoparticles can get absorbed by those individual skin cells and can cause problems. That's not how it works in a biological system, where we have a skin barrier that is made up of layers and layers and layers of those skin cells, and those skin cells are surrounded by lipid membranes. So I'm not as worried, and I'd say if you have concern, then avoid the nanoparticles. It gets to be kind of two sides of the hand with the physical blockers is if you are going with a non-nano or non-micronized particles, then you're going to have more of a whitish residue on your skin. And so and if you don't mind that, then I would say go ahead and use that. But there are some people that will not use sunscreen if it leaves a whitish residue. So they would prefer the nanoparticles because that will rub in a little bit more. And again, we really don't know that, you know, that that's acting in the same way in a human system as it does in a petri dish.
Thank you, Mary, for calling. Victor in Antigo, your turn. Hi, Victor.
Hi. Well, good, excellent program. I'm coming from the opposite direction. Without skin screen, I try to go and get a little vitamin D, and then I cover myself up good with clothes. Is that pretty safe?
Yes. I mean, we have focused on sunscreen, and I look at sunscreen as the backup plan. Most people use it as their primary defense for UV radiation. But really, to me, sunscreen should be the backup plan. We should be doing things like protective clothing, wide-rimmed hats, sunglasses with a wide lens, seeking shade, trying to avoid the midday sun. And when all of that fails, that's where sunscreen comes in and plays an important role. But if we're just really relying only on sunscreen, there's a lot of imperfections in how people use sunscreen, in the whole sunscreen industry, in the chemicals and particles that get used. So I think that's great. And then you also bring up this question about vitamin D. Yeah, I think it is important. And that's something that for my very fair-skinned patients who have a history of a lot of skin cancer and they're really avoiding the sun, then we check vitamin D levels. And supplementation is a great way to get vitamin D if you're not able to be in the sun as much. You know, it also depends on how much pigment you have in your skin. So some people who have a little bit more pigment in their skin will tolerate being outside longer without getting a burn. And when it comes to melanoma, it's really those sunburns that really dramatically increase your risk. Just regular sun exposure on a daily basis over many, many years will contribute to photoaging, which is most of what we think about aging, blotchy color, discoloration of the skin, sagging skin, wrinkles. But then those non-melanoma type skin cancers, it's also sort of this accumulated sun exposure over a lifetime. And fair-skinned people who tend to burn very easily do have more of those types of skin cancer than people who have more pigment. However, people with more pigment in their skin still get skin cancer, and a lot of times it goes unrecognized. So it might be diagnosed at a much later stage, and they actually do have more death from skin cancer because it does get diagnosed so late typically. So those are just some little tidbits.
You mentioned fair-skinned person, and a listener in Lake Mills emailed to ask you to explain the science of getting a suntan and if it's possible for a fair-skinned person who always burns to get a suntan, and if so, how? She's in her 50s. She only has two choices, burn or use SPS 40.
I would go with 100% the SPF 40 every time. There is a good way that you can get a tan, and that's a spray tan or a lotion tan. But for those of us, and I'm in the same boat, I have very fair skin, and I can look out of the window and burn on a warm summer day. You know, and that burn is a measure of DNA damage. So a sunburn is an indication that you've had enough UV radiation exposure to cause significant damage to your DNA of the skin cells. So, you know, really, really avoiding those burns. And the other thing that I really have to say is those tanning beds, they're also not a good idea. So for many fair skin people say, well, I'll go into a tanning bed first so I don't burn. But really with tanning beds, you're getting unopposed UV radiation with no blocks. You're avoiding the UVB, which creates the burn, which is our signal to get out of the sun. So you get this unopposed UVA radiation exposure, which really, really can dramatically increase your risk of aging and skin cancer, both melanoma and non-melanoma. So tanning beds are not a good way to go either. It's the spray-on or rub-on tanning products.
Louis in Oconto, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, Dr. Apple, this is what I had going on last year. Hasn't occurred this year, but last year when I was along Lake Michigan, and the Bay of Green Bay, if I was in the water, I'd get this burning rash on my legs. And then later on in the season, I could just be out of the water and still get it on my arms.
I mean, that's something that I think probably you should see a healthcare provider for. It's hard to know for sure what's going on. There's something called aquagenic urticaria or hives when people get exposed to water. You know, if it's only happening in the summertime, there's also some conditions where people can have sensitivity to the sun and get hives related to the sun or just itchy rashes. But in the summer, we're also out more, we're exposed more. There might be something you're getting into. So there's a lot of factors that might be coming to play in that, and it would be a good idea to get checked out by a dermatologist.
Jeremy and O'Connell called to say, if you're going to Hawaii, invest in clothing that will block the UV rays. Sunscreen won't cut it. He's been there many times.
That goes back to that UPF rated clothing, which is my favorite. That really should be way, way, way above the sunscreens. When you put it on, it's protecting you. When you take it off, it's not. And so we don't have to worry about, oh, did I reapply my sunscreen? Did I put enough on? You know, it really is a great force shield. So I totally agree. You know, and that's when I go out on a boat or if I'm out at sporting events with my kids, I have an overshirt that I'll throw on. And then I know I'm protected for the time I'm wearing that UPF overshirt.
Listener emailed, he has a new basal cell nodule on his cheek. Can he use a cream instead of Mohs surgery?
That's an interesting, so I'm guessing he used something either called black salve or bloodroot. That's a really tricky thing to do. It can make the skin cancers look like they've gone away. There are many, many cases of that not working well. And having the skin cancer look like it goes away, and then 5 years later, the skin cancer grows underneath the scar that bloodroot or black salve has created. So that's something that I would be really, especially on the cheek, I'd be really nervous about that. And you know, that's something that you might not see it show up on the surface because of the type of scarring that those creams can cause. So that is a bit of a risky, that's a bit of a risk to take.
And Joan and Sturgeon Bay, back to checking your own skin regularly. Have someone check those places on your head where you can't see. She noticed what looked like a funny freckle on the back of her husband's ear. Turned out to be melanoma. Had a small pie-shaped wedge removed from his ear by a plastic surgeon, and now sees a dermatologist regularly. He was told that she might have saved his life.
Yeah, she very well might have. You know, and certainly saved his ear for sure, because if that melanoma had gone any deeper, again, that goes back to when we catch it very early, the five-year survival is over 98%. You know, if it goes to the regional lymph nodes, so the lymph nodes in the area, that five-year survival drops to about 65%, a little over 65%. And then if it has a chance to go internally or metastasize, that five-year survival drops to just over 25%. So absolutely. And that ear is a tricky place to be able to remove and reconstruct. So he's a lucky guy.
Yeah. And keep your kids covered with clothing or sunscreen. Don't let them burn, right?
Yep. The risk for melanoma especially is dramatically increased when we have blistering childhood sunburns, or blistering burns that occur in childhood or even in adolescence. So that's a time that really is it's important to keep your kids protected and to get them in the good habit of protecting their skin.
Been a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today, Apple. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Dr. Apple Bodimer, dermatologist, associate professor in the doctor of in the Department of Dermatology at UW-Madison. I hope we can get her back. She always does such a wonderful job. Well, tomorrow on the show, Scott Craven is back, our wildlife ecologist, to answer all your wildlife questions. He's probably got a few stories to tell, too, from his time fishing in Florida recently. But you know what? I hope you'll stay with us right through the afternoon. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.